Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, now about favorable devotional service. I think we'll start in the purport. The purport is that one may also be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably, but that cannot be counted as pure devotional service. Pure devotional service should be free from the desire for any material benefit or for sense gratification, as these desires are cultivated through fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. Generally, people are engaged in different activities to get some material profit, while most philosophers are engaged in proposing transcendental realization through volumes of word jugglery and speculation. Pure devotional service must always be free from such fruitive activities and philosophical speculations. One has to learn Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service from the authorities by spontaneous loving service. All right, so many important concepts are here because we're dealing with the principles that we're performing. The soul doesn't belong in the material world, and the soul's natural position is devotional service, which is the activity of the spiritual world. The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, therefore it basically looks the same in that how something, a tree reflected in the water, looks like the actual tree, but actually is not, but the form of it's the same. So the problem is the illusion that you don't recognize that it's connected to the original tree, right? So therefore we see is that we're trying to perform the activities of the spiritual world in a reflection, right? Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes is that we're so used to that there is the reflection and being absorbed in that, or if we're not going to be absorbed in the reflection, then we have nothing to do with the reflection. And then we deal with something that is supposedly beyond the reflection, but itself has no form. You understand? So the concept of dealing with the means the reflection, how you deal with the original form, doesn't exist anywhere in material consciousness. Nowhere. It's a brand new concept, right? We're very used to karma, we're very used to jnana. You say one or the other, everybody understands. But you say devotional service, then as long as we can fit it into our mundane paradigm, then it works for us. Because here, Prabhupada is saying, you can purport is that one may also be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably. Right, but if you ask most devotees, they will say you can't be Krishna conscious and be unfavorable. Right, unless they remember, you know, the example of Kamsa or these other demons. Right, so Krishna consciousness means devotional service, because we see later on Prabhupada uses it. One has to learn Krishna conscious or pure devotional service. Because here, Krishna consciousness means pure devotional service. But at the same time, as we're pointing it out, is that it can be Krishna conscious, but not pure devotional service. You can be conscious. Does that make sense? So the tendency is, therefore, if we're going to deal with the spiritual form, right, we have to make it that there's no connection. Right. So the tree is there. Yes, it's a real tree. But the point is the point where the one touches the other, Right? In other words, the reflection of the water touches the base of the real tree. That they don't accept. There's illusion, which has nothing to do with the real tree. And then there's the real tree, it has nothing to do with illusion. Now, is that fact, or is that illusion in itself? Right? It's an illusion in itself. So deifying Krishna, deifying the spiritual master, deifying the devotional process, has a tinge of illusion in it. It's well meant. You want to, within one's own mind, keep it that, yes, God's pure, the devotees are pure, the process is pure. So that's there, but the problem is in the process of deifying all these three, then the difficulty comes up is that, and also the scriptures. Let's say also that, I heard that the other day. They'll deify the scriptures, that they can't include things that deal with actual mundane stuff. So scriptures can only deal with philosophy and stuff like that. So they deify, you know, all your sources of knowledge and the process of applying that knowledge. So that's great. So that means you're in Krishna, pure Krishna consciousness, or you're just being a practical guy. You understand? So this dualistic concept is actually not devotional. It's a philosophical aberration, right? Dualism is not an accepted philosophy. Right? Meaning where God and His creation are separate. Right? It can't be. Because otherwise, since one's deified the Lord, then this dualistic aspect means He's not actually controlling or is the Lord of what He has been separated from. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, scriptures can be about mundane things, and if they are, they're bogus. So therefore, if we need to know how to deal with material energy, we go to the Karmi literature. Right? That's bona fide. If I go out and get a Karmi book, that's bona fide. But it's the Vedic literature, oh no, that's bogus. Right? Because we're just being practical, yukta vairagya. Strange yukta vairagya, even though the terms are in Sanskrit, can't be applied on Vedic things. Right? You'll always notice that the yukta vairagyists, they are always preaching non-Vedic things being engaged in devotional service. And at the same time, they oppose, as fanatic, Vedic things being engaged in devotional service. Always. Why? Because you're dealing with mundane consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So this deification then gets in the way of devotional service. Therefore, one can't understand and decide that Krishna consciousness is, you have to be Krishna conscious to be in pure devotional service. But in that Krishna consciousness, you should see that it's not motivated by karma or jnana. Right? But at the same time, as even if it is, it's not. It's better than not being God conscious. You know what I'm saying? In other words, being God conscious that's partially favorable is better than not being God conscious, because it's not good to mix them. Right? Like the other day. The devotee is saying, how can I remember Krishna in my heart when my heart is full of all kinds of, you know, mundane, you know, impure things? So I can't bring Krishna there. Right? One thing is they forget is Krishna's already there. As Paramatma, he's been there before you even knew that they were bad activities. Right? And two is by remembering Krishna, it clears from the heart all these things. But they're taking it that the impurities in the heart actually have substance. They're real. Sin is real. You understand? No, sin's an illusion. Not that sinful activities aren't there, but what makes sinful activities? Because the person performing them is under illusion. Right? That illusion is you don't see its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? So, that element, therefore, is what makes the difference. So, because of this, we can't apply where you have an activity that doesn't seem, it's not ideal, but Krishna is still connected with it, therefore it's progressive. Right? But if they are going to acknowledge that, they're just going to say, well, that's good enough, and not progress. Or they're going to say, no, this is the standard, and therefore anything less than that is useless. Right? And then one of, you know, those who say it be as practical in that, call the ones who's making a standard as fanatic. But they're just as fanatic in the opposite direction. You know what I'm saying? In other words, a liberal is just as conservative in liberalism. They're not actually broad-minded. They're very narrow-minded in their liberalism. Because a liberalness is only for a narrow group of persons and certain circumstances. Right? So you have right conservatives and you have left conservatives. That's all. You don't actually have liberals. Liberals are in the middle. They have the standards of the right conservatives and the consideration and sensitivity to apply those conservative standards to an individual. That means you have to use your brains. To just say anyone does whatever they want takes no brains at all. Absolutely no brains. But to figure out how a standard applies at every time, place, and circumstance to an individual, that means you have to think. And you have to think each time it's applied. Right? Now, that doesn't work very good for someone if you just want to efficiently get something done. So you have to make it that, therefore, it's everybody does what they want or here's the blanket rule. Right? So they're complaining that the blanket rule is being applied across the board, but so is the liberality. Right? It's consistent in its lack of consideration, lack of dealing with the individual. So the liberal thinks he's dealing with the individual, but technically he's not. Maybe emotionally, but actually the situation was beneficial. You know, and its social repercussions. That they're not addressing at all. Does this make sense? So, these are the problems that come up from this same mentality. I mean, in other words, we've always had this problem. It's liberal or it's conservative. No, it's supposed to be broad-minded in the middle. It has the good from both and removes the bad from both. Right? The bad and the one, you know, is the basis of the other's good. But you have to take the good from both and leave the bad from both. Does that make sense? Like that. So the standard is the middle. It's not that all these two parties are bona fide, so we're compromising in the middle. No, the middle is the standard. And going off the middle, then you end up in the right or the left. We have to change the way of looking at it. You know, does that make sense? Then these things start to work. So, difficulty then is that devotees will look at it, or may look at it, that the devotional process, it can't be mixed. We're not interested in mixed. No, we make that point we're not interested in mixed, so that we will not remain on the mixed platform. But if one is a neophyte, it's basically guaranteed it's mixed devotional service. Right? Then when one comes to the Madhyam platform, that mixing is not, I say, obvious in one's motives. It may still be there by practice, but one is trying to get rid of that. Does that make sense? That's why it's called pure devotional service. But it is the beginning stage of advanced devotional service. Right? So that aspect there, then one has to see is that the two can go on simultaneously. It's in other words, it's a position to go through. Right? Does that make sense? You're not healthy, so you take up some exercise. So it's not that the first day you do the exercise is perfect and you're in perfect health. No, it's a mix between your lack of health and the exercise and moving towards good health. Does that make sense? It's an overlap. You're dirty, you take a bath. The process of taking a bath, you can't say you're clean. But it's the process of the bath that makes you clean. But you can't say that, well, the bath is okay, so therefore stay in there all day. You know, do a Yoko Ono in the bathtub, you know, like that. 7-day bath, you know, like that. You know, so that's not that's not the point. That's the one say, oh, well, you know, it's fine. You know, we're just being practical. Just stay in the bathtub is practical? You know? So that's the whole idea is that how do you adjust this? It means that the process is a combination between the position you are at and the position you want to get to. That's the overlay. It's the mix. So that means, then, as also as we're saying, according to the process of logic, then this the devotional process, right? That has to be connected to the individual in whatever position they're in, and at the same time have its eternal relationship with the goal, which is, you know, your pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? Therefore, the symptoms of devotional service, you'll say, therefore they are engaged in devotional service. You understand? But you have to be able to work with all three, otherwise it is not logic. Right? It's something misrepresented, a mundane misconception. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to acknowledge that devotional, you want to be Krishna conscious. First you have to be conscious, then Krishna conscious, and that Krishna conscious should be favorable. So how much it's not favorable, then one should be working on that. But how much is favorable, fan that. Don't squash that. Oh, it's mixed devotional service, it's useless. No, the principle of being situated as a goal in mixed devotional service, and that's fine, that's a problem. But to use mixed devotional service to get to the platform of pure devotional service, that's standard. You don't actually have another process unless you do like the gopis. You are there, see Krishna, surrender unto him immediately, and become an Uttamadhikari in a moment. Which is the recommended process. If you can't do that, then you have to accept the process of gradual elevation through the process of sadhana. That means there's going to be a mix between one's conditioned nature and desires and needs and actual pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Then another interesting way of how Prabhupada's used it, you know, he points it out. In other words, someone has problems, it's not good they have the problems, but you can't throw everything, you can't throw out the devotional service they've done for the problem, because the problem is the minor. The devotional service is that, you know, coming to the platform of pure devotion, that's the major. So that process is the medium that connects the two. Does that make sense? Right, so you can't throw out the major because, you know, because the minor is still what it is. You know what I'm saying? So it's like somebody comes to a devotee and then is expected everything's just gone. So if they do anything wrong, then, you know, oh, they're a devotee. So therefore, the sinful reaction is much greater. That's okay. Nice. On one platform. You know, if it's like Varna Shankar or not, yes. A Brahmana has Varna Shankar, that's worse than if a Kshatriya has Varna Shankar, which is worse than if a Vaishya has Varna Shankar, which is worse than if a Shudra has Varna Shankar. Right? If Varna Shankars have Varna Shankars, that's normal. Right? Chandalas have Chandalas for kids, that's normal. But if Chandalas have Swapachas as kids, that's not good. Right, and if Swapachas and Chandalas get together, you get Antar Vasayins, which are the lowest of the low, and even the outcasts consider them outcasts. They won't deal with them. You understand? So it does start from the top. But at the same time, as the other things, the Brahmana may do things, but because of the situation in Krishna consciousness, and knowing what is the actual process, they can keep themselves on that path by good association. So what they need is association, not being, you know, told how sinful they are. Sin, that's everybody's understanding. It's just like pray to the deity, oh, I'm so sinful, I'm so useless, you know, please Krishna, make this sin go away. Okay, so what happens? So, and then if the sin goes away, then what? Then what are you left with? Nothing. A very pure, mundane existence. You understand? You want to pray for pure, unalloyed devotional service, a taste for Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. right? To give up this mundane concept and come back to the original, that we're Krishna's servant and therefore take up His service. That's what we should be focusing on. Then if some sin is getting in the way, that then you deal with. But that's not the prominent. We're not trying to become pure. We're trying to become Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious is automatically pure. So if we want to become pure, we do it by the process of Krishna consciousness. Because if we're doing it by the process of the mundane, then generally speaking, Mileshas and Yavanas aren't really known for having that high level of... You know what I'm saying? Brahman drinks water without touching his mouth. He picks up a glass of water, drinks without touching his mouth. He'll wash his hands because he'll consider his hands dirty. You understand? That's a Brahman. He eats. After he eats, he has to clean where he eats. A Brahman goes into a place, the place has to be cleaner than when he went into it, when he leaves. He goes in the bathroom, it's dirty, he'll do something. Right? So, how many Mileshas and Yavanas you know do that? Not a whole lot. So, that's the problem. So, by the mundane process, basically no one's really going to purify themselves and elevate themselves. Maybe a touch. It's only by devotional service that has the power to remove all the sin and everything else. Because it actually destroys the root. Because the sin is based on ignorance, on illusion. And the illusion is, I'm this body and what is, you know, I and mine. So, devotional service means these are removed. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that has to be accepted, that there is this overlap. The overlap's not ideal, but it's the only way that you can deal with it. Right? The other alternative, which is better, surrender this moment. You know, Maharaj Katvanga did it, so then why not? Right? So that's the one aspect. The other aspect is what's interesting. One has to learn Krishna consciousness, pure devotional service, from the authorities. So that's the point, is your connection to authorities. Right? That means the scripture, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? That has to be the basis. So one's not going to be successful in devotional service by not accepting the Shastra, the Vedic literatures, not accepting Prabhupada's instructions and his purports, not accepting the Vaishnavas, that they can be advanced. Right? You understand? So these aren't practical. People can talk all they like, but it's not scientific. Devotional service learned from the authorities. But we're trying to not. We're trying to look from outside, karmi, mundane authorities. But what can they teach you? They can teach you karma and jnana. Right? And that's the whole jumping up and down, because the devotional service had some mix. So you throw out the devotional service, keep the mix, and then learn from the karmis how to do a nice mix. Right? So that's not very logical. Right? So instead of understanding how the medium is connected to the ultimate goal, universally connected, eternally connected, then they throw that out and then go back to the minor thing, and now somehow or another try to turn that into the goal. But the minor is the situation. It's not the goal. Sambandha is not prayojana. Right? Abhideya gets you prayojana. So therefore, then they throw it out and use a different abhideya. In other words, it's just made up. It's not according to Guru Sadhana. It's just made up. It sounds good, right? Because why does it sound good? Because it's very close and similar to the way the Mileshas and Yavanas think before they join Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it seems that it's one's practice. You know what I'm saying? Because those things that the Westerners think are very practical, the Indians don't. You know, what the Indians think is practical, the Westerners don't. So, therefore, once you come back to the mundane, then you really gotta, how you say, as Hansa Dutta would say, can of worms. So does that make sense? Now, the next point says, from the authorities by spontaneous loving service. Right? This is the introduction. That means it's giving the basis of the whole book. You know? And then, you know, and then people will say Prabhupada is just fixed inviting. But the point is Prabhupada has a definition of spontaneous devotional service that is used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Rupa Goswami. That means you're spontaneously inspired to do devotional service. It doesn't matter what it is. Some of your contemporary definitions, unless it's connected with the gopis or Braja Bhakti, it's not spontaneous devotional service. They'll stand up on their orange crate, you know, and yell and scream that this is the only definition. But that's not the definition. Right? Spontaneous means you like doing it rather than doing it because that's what the Shastra says. So when someone quotes Raghvartma Chanyuka by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and says, this is how you have to do, that's Vaidhi. Just because you're quoting a Raghunuga scripture and saying you have to do it, then that makes that Vaidhi. And they so don't know spontaneous devotional service, they can't tell that's what they've just done. They can't tell. The spontaneous means, it's as simple as this. You like to, it means generally, most, well, except I'll have to excuse the health food freaks from this example, right? You know, I wouldn't want to insult them in any way by connecting them with supposedly not so healthy foodstuffs, right? So, people, devotees like to take prasad, it's spontaneous. So it's just a matter of taking that spontaneity to eat prasadam and apply it into other aspects, like going to Mangalarti, chanting your japa, being in kirtan, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping Tulsi, living in the Dham. You like doing, you go to Mangalarti not because it's Brahma Muhurta, it's the best time of day for spiritual life, you know, and by seeing the deity in the morning, then you remove all sins, and by that, you know, unlimited sins go, you know, blah, 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 you can go on and on. If that's why you're going, that's good. You're there. You're with Krishna. Krishna sees you first thing in the morning. You see Him. That's great for the relationship. But that's Vaidhi. Spontaneous means you like being at Mangalarti, you like being there, you like seeing Krishna first thing. You want to be there so when the curtains open, Krishna is there, you know, to see you. Right? That's spontaneous devotional service. Now, its point is that if it's only for in prasad, then we wouldn't call that the bulk of one's devotional activities, right? So, you know, unless you're something out of Monty Python, right? You know, like that. But other than that, then you would have more things in the day. So it's a small part of your devotional activity. So when the major amount of your activities becomes spontaneous, then that takes on that quality. Does that make sense? Because it's spontaneous because you identify as servant of the Lord. Right? Yes. In the waves of devotion. Be very careful with this. I'm saying, be very careful with your question. No, not the book. I said, be very careful with your question. Because you're basing on waves of devotion. A summary study of this book that has been taken from the original verses and from commentaries and all that to bring out things that Prabhupada is saying. I would say, yeah, it means you can, means those who are within the realm of the Raganuga, they might confuse it with Ragatmika. But I think your general devotees wouldn't deal with Ragatmika. You know what I'm saying? Because here it's just like this. It's like this principle. just like you have Krishna consciousness and then favorable devotional service. Right? Now, favorable devotional service means you're Krishna conscious. So technically, they're non-different. Right? Because there's an eternal relationship between being Krishna conscious and favorable devotional service. Right? But at the same time, if it's not favorable, though it's Krishna conscious, it's not pure devotional service. Right? So in the same way, is that you have spontaneous devotional service. It means it's spontaneous. That's the principle. Now, in that spontaneous devotional service, it says from the authorities. So that means we're learning from the authorities about spontaneous devotional service. That means we're following in their footsteps. So therefore, anuga, rag, their rag, we are anuging that. So we may think, I have natural spontaneity towards Krishna. That's ragatmika. We don't have that. So they make that mistake. But that's not actually, that is, once you get into it, that is a point that has to be made. But generally, the controversy comes up is that this point of spontaneous is a generalized category that you can be in without being so specific in the association of the authorities on the Raganuga platform. You understand? They're two different things. Just like you have to be conscious to be Krishna conscious. You have to be Krishna conscious to actually be favorable. So the same way you have to be spontaneous to actually then follow in the footsteps. Does that make sense? They're not splitting this point. So they're splitting that one, Ragatmika and Raganuga. But Raganuga as defined as already engaged in following in the footsteps of a specific devotee in Vrindavan and the principle of being spontaneous. Because the point is you may not understand it, but why are we going to Mangalarti? Because Prabhupada's established it. Right? And the devotees in Vrindavan, they like going to Mangalarti. You know, they look forward to that. You know what I'm saying? The gopi is then there with Krishna in the morning, so they get to see Radha and Krishna how we're seeing. You know what I'm saying? Radha and Krishna together, after they've gotten up from the kunja, they can see them. They have their arti. And everybody's there and watching. Right? Not everybody's trying to do it and then that way get the mercy. No, Lalita is offering the arti. Everyone else is watching. And singing and like that. Then Krishna goes back home, goes to bed. Then Mother Jashoda comes with her intimate associates to wake Krishna up. That's the first thing they see. Then Krishna gets up and then goes out, you know, into the cow shed. And then the cowherd boys, that's the first time they get to see him because they got up early just so they could see Krishna there. And then the cows get to see Krishna first thing. Therefore, this concept of Mangalarti is everybody, as soon as possible in the morning, they want to see Krishna as soon as they get up. So that is the principle, a spontaneity to see Krishna first thing. Then it's a specific detail that you want to see it, how the gopis see it, or Mother Jashoda sees it, cowboy sees it, or the cows see it. You understand? This is the one point that you won't find in any of these books by any of these people talking about. Nothing. And that's where the confusion comes in. There'll be some confusion coming in between Raganuga and Ragatmika, but how many people can even, you know, well, yeah, of course, that, but the thing is Raganuga continues even when you come to the Nitya Siddha platform. I would even say those that make this point, they've missed the point. Nectar Devotion points out that technically speaking, only one devotee is Ragatmika. And technically speaking, there's only one devotee in the cosmic creation. And that's Radharani. Everybody else is her servant. That means she has the rag. She being the Sarup Shakti has that complete rag for Krishna. From all aspects. As Krishna expands, she expands with him to serve him. That means since Krishna's manifested everything, that means she's manifested as everything. He is rasa, and she is all the forms that you see that rasa is expressed through. Everything. Right? Even the love that two dogs are having over on the side of the road. That is still coming from Krishna and Radharani. Very, very extremely distant, but it's still coming from them. So everybody is only serving them. There's no question of anything else. So in that way, she's the only one that's ragatmika. Everyone else is raganuga. But at the same time, it's because, so that's the general principle of just being completely surrendered to Krishna. That the maximum that can be, that there's a, that there's no even difference between Radha and Krishna. You know what I'm saying? They're one person in two bodies. You understand the mood in rasa. In tattva, you can make them. There's the Lord, Shakti and Shaktiman. Right? But in rasa, there's no difference. It's just two forms. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the rasa can be tasted. All everything else is an expansion of that, and it doesn't have the same fullness, though it's complete in itself. Everything coming from Krishna is complete. Perfect and complete. But it's still, it's just a portion of the other. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, then to make the distinction, so because it's a specific taste in rasa, therefore, Radharani is taking that role as Ladini Shakti, though she's Sarup Shakti. She's everything. And therefore, in the conjugal rasa, she leads that. Mother Yashoda leads the parental. You know, then you have the cowherd boys, and there are different kinds of categories leading that. Then the servants, then the cows, the trees, the birds, you know, like this. You understand? Then you want that specific kind of raganuga. Then you follow in their footsteps. So they're the ragatmika devotees. So we never become ragatmika. The only thing that can be ragatmika is shakti. Right? But we're tatastha shakti. The antaranga shakti can become raganuga. We're tatastha. Ragatmika. We're never ragatmika. We're always raganuga. So some say when you come to prema, then you become ragatmika. It is your life, but you're following your life is how the other person sees. How Radharani, the others see. That's your life. That's the atmika. So we're always raganuga. That's why the term ragatmika doesn't come up very much. It is there, but we follow, the raganuga means following the footsteps of those who are ragatmika. But there's still the generic principle of just being spontaneous. So the lack of ability to be able to see that makes for a major problem. Because they can't see that, they also can't see the difference between raganuga and ragatmika. That we never become ragatmika. You could say that, yes, because the rag, attachment to Krishna, is one's life and soul completely, you could classify that as ragatmika. But within that ragatmika category, we're still raganuga. Because it's not our rag. Brahma Samhita says, Radharani, then her love permeates all the other gopis. It says right there. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is one candle to the next candle, so it's complete. But that example is not given about jivas, is it? You ever hear it? Then it's like electricity. You're empowered. Vishnu, he expands like that unlimitedly. That's what he does. But he's Shaktiman. We're not Shaktiman. We're a form of Shakti. We're on the outer edge of Shakti. You know what I'm saying? So our business is assisting Shakti, which means Raganuga. Does this make sense? It's just the logical definition. So with understanding these three, then it can be clear. Therefore, then the definitions that the Acharyas give that you're just spontaneous in your sadhana, that is, it is Raganuga. It may be a lower level. It's not so specific. Yes. Rag means attachment. Rag anuga means following in the footsteps of someone's attachment. So we're always going to be doing that.
So even if we have some feeling like some attachment for doing some service, it's like that there's some aspect of what we're doing.
There is, yes. That's the point, is that we see is the difference in, that's why it's very important to hear from, if you really want to know something about male and female interaction, you have to, for the girls, you have to ask the married women. because the girls who are not married, they blow it all out of proportion and miss the actual essential points. You know what I'm saying? They all just talk to this, that, this, but it has no substance. Because the married women know how to live together to make it work. The others just know the little, you know, interesting, little exciting parts. You understand? So, therefore, we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, then in, you know, quoting that in the introduction, we'll get to that. Means when we finish this one. In Upadeshamrita. That's the next one we'll do. Is that, that Bhav's, he starts talking about Shravana Dasa, Varna Dasa, and Smarana Dasa, which are the first three stages of five stages of Bhav Sadhana, which means what's practiced when you are liberated. You come to the platform of Brahma Bhuta, where you are in your Swarup. You've attained Swarup City. You have your spiritual form. You're in Vrindavan performing your devotional activities. That's Bhava Sadhana. You understand? But they take the first three and stretch them all the way down to when you first come in contact with Krishna consciousness. That it starts there. Shravana Dasa then starts from when you hear, I am servant of Krishna. And it's perfect. Then when it comes to the platform of perfection, when you actually identify to the point where you receive your spiritual form. That's the maturation of that. Then Varna Dasa, you adjust with this concept, I am Krishna's servant. So therefore you start taking up the practices of devotional service, identifying that way, doing activities that are connected with being a devotee. Its perfection is therefore whatever your rasa is with Krishna, you're adjusted with that. Right? Because it's not just you just walk in and here I am. You have to practice it. We're people. You know what I'm saying? It's not just some mystic thing that boink, it just happens. That's how the mundaners think about it. You know, that's why, what do you call it? Moses looks so strange in the Ten Commandments after he becomes perfect, right? You know? Like that, right? How is it that, I guess it must be, so the pompadour is like a spiritual hair design or something? You understand? So then Smarana Dasa starts from you trying to remember Krishna, that I'm doing this for Krishna and everything in relationship to Krishna. And that then it perfects itself when you come to the fifth stage of Smarana in Samadhi, where you come to the point where you're always absorbed in Krishna and there's nothing else on your mind. Right? Then when you get to there, then your Bhav Sadhana is perfect. Then in that you move on to, you know, how you say, Apandasa and Sampatidasa. You understand? Otherwise you'll never get there. But the process starts down there. So these persons, these ones from the spiritual world, they can see it that big. And the ones from here, they get so caught up in this very narrow little thing. And then try to extend that, the form, down to the neophyte. No, it doesn't work like that. Raganuga, where Raganuga means it's prominent. Right? And they're working on a particular form and trying to say that is Raganuga. So therefore, if the neophyte devotee sits around and reads about Radha Krishna pastimes and all that, that's Raganuga. And then after he puts the book down, he goes to bed with his wife. Technically, if you really want to talk Raganuga, then, you know, then we follow what Shankaracharya says. First take sannyas, then we'll talk Raganuga. How is a grihasa going to be Raganuga unless he's liberated? You know what I'm saying? If we really want to get down to it. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point comes back to is that that's not its definition. Because that form of devotion, that form of Raganuga, that is for as you become more mature. But first you have to be spontaneous in the first place. Then you can add a specific kind of spontaneity. You know what I'm saying? Right? Chanting Hare Krishna will take you back to the spiritual realm. The Gayatri Mantra then shows specific where in the spiritual realm you want to go. Hare Krishna can do that also because it comes from Radha and Krishna, so there's nothing that it can't establish. But it gives in our own, for our own sadhana, a specific meditation. So therefore, that spontaneity and devotional service automatically will turn into a specific relationship. Vishwanath makes that very clear. If you don't come to Raganuga in Madhyam, you will come to it when you come to the Uttam platform. It's just going to, it's going to happen. You're associating with spontaneous devotees. It's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Now the problem comes is that when we take the form of that more mature devotional activity, you know, of the Madhyama devotees, and then try to apply that to the neophytes, and it doesn't make sense. Because they're just trying to become spontaneous. So he's spontaneous, okay, he loves reading about the gopis, but he also loves spending his time in bed with his wife. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, he's only actually spontaneous in a broad way about his mundane activities. It's the same mistake. It's the same mistake that the devotional moralists make, is the same mistake made by these, you know, devotional raganugis. Right? Is that they don't understand how to broaden. They can't understand is that for the Vaidhi, yes, all these activities, your mundane activities, your family, all these different things, those have to be connected to Krishna through the Shastra. It's not ideal, but it has to be done because that's where your attention is. And then from doing that, then you'll elevate yourself and be spiritual and see Krishna there. And then as long as that's favorable, you'll continue in that situation. When it's not favorable anymore, you won't be. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So in the same way in the rag, that the first thing is just become inspired about performing the devotional activities. That's why we focus so much on the Vaidhi. But our purpose of doing that is to get to the Raganuga platform. It's very obvious. He says it right here. Just Prabhupada never uses the word hardly Raganuga. He uses spontaneous. We use spontaneous, everyone will sit around with a smile on their face. If in that same place you say Raganuga, immediately the bells go off and the flags come and the, you know, howitzers come out and, you know, the B-52s are out. You know, it's all happening. You know what I'm saying? Because those who are not necessarily applying it properly, they are attached to those terms and have to use those terms. And so therefore they've given these terms a bad name. And they can't understand the broadness of it. All you have to do is say is that there's different levels of Raganuga. As it is now, Raganuga is considered a bad word. It's not part of our process. What do you mean it's not? It's right here in the introduction. We haven't even gotten to the book yet, and it's already talking about it. And one of the waves in the first ocean is spontaneous devotional service. Right? So that means it's important. But the point is come to the platform where you like doing these things. Then, if you like doing these things, then you can be specific about particularly what kind of things you like doing in relationship to Krishna. Otherwise, it's we are a soul, He is God, we're doing activities for Him that we spontaneously like to do for Him. That's still Raganuga, but in its very broad sense. Right? Then, because our purpose is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, it gets to there. It doesn't stop there. Otherwise, it stops there. That's Vaikuntha. Right? But even in Vaikuntha, they start out with the Vaidhi and that's all, and then get to the spontaneous platform of performing Vaidhi. It's just how they like their spontaneity to be manifest. Therefore, it's called on reverence. But not that it's not spontaneous. They also preach spontaneous. You know what I'm saying? But not at the expense of the rules. Spontaneity within the rules. Braj is spontaneity beyond the rules. You know what I'm saying? It includes the rules. The rules become secondary. Right? The spontaneity becomes primary. Does this make sense? So, therefore, you have to be very, very careful that the wording that's used in there you know, basically speaking, if you see it, it's saying what Prabhupada's saying. But he's using the technical terms that Rupa Goswami uses, which Prabhupada occasionally uses, but most of the time uses the English. So you have to be very, very... What I meant is when you make a question from there, don't separate that book from the next, you know, from Prabhupada's teaching. You know, use it against each other. That might is my point. Does that make sense? That's the point. In other words, it's written to so we understand Prabhupada's book. Right? Otherwise, it would be based on studying the original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's not. It's based on studying nectar devotion. You know that stuff? So I just, sometimes the devotees, they bring up another shastra, then they use it in contradiction to the one that you're discussing. So that's my point. Does that make sense? There's no problem with the book. Yes. She doesn't consider herself a devotee, but she is. She is a devotee. And Krishna considers himself a devotee of his devotees, right? So for him, like if Krishna sees himself as his devotee of his devotees, why would it be a problem for us, if we want to associate with him, to identify as devotee of the devotees? So if we want to associate with Krishna, we have to be in the same mentality, which is the devotee of the devotees. So therefore it's all. So therefore Radharani becomes the center. She is the supreme object. Like that. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the who put that together is very scholarly and very thorough. You understand? So they always... Yeah, like that. Okay, so I guess we'll end here. We did finish the... reread the sentence and that, so... I was thinking I just got a few more pages, but... never quite got there.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Sitanath Premanandi, Hare Hare.